We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're thinking about starting your own podcast, you might want to check out Spotify. Spotify has a platform that lets you make a podcast super easily and then distribute it everywhere and even monetize it. And all of these features are in one place. And even better, it's free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters. Check it out and see how it works. Now, on to Untangle. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio, the 5-star app, and Muse, the brain-sensing headband that helps you meditate. I'm Patricia Karpus. The Muse headband and app can help you start a meditation practice or deepen your practice. And the Muse S was specifically designed to give you lots of meditations, visualizations, and features to help you sleep better. All great stuff. Check it out at choosemuse.com. Today, we have an episode with my co-host, Ariel Garten.
Hello, everyone. Today, my guest is the incredibly fascinating James Nestor. He's the author of the amazing book, Breath, New Science of a Lost Art. James is a journalist who went on to a journey to fix his own breathing, and in the process interviewed dozens of top pulmonologists, those are essentially breathing doctors, pulmonauts, those are like astronauts, but of one's own breathing, breathwork techniques, shamans, and more. And he performed a range of amazing experiments on himself. He's here today to take us into an adventure into our own lungs and blood vessels, and share the science of breathing, the why and how we breathe, and how doing it better can help us with a range of life's problems. He'll also explain a few different breathing practices like Wim Hof and holotropic and box breathing, and how and when to use them so that we have a toolkit when the need arises. So hello, James. It is an absolute pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks so much for having me.
I am so happy to talk to you today because I have to say I read your book, Breath, and I read it like enthusiastically. I dove into it. It is so engaging. And then I bought it for kind of everybody in my life who I can think of who needs to know how to breathe better, which is kind of everyone.
That's amazing. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for writing it. So I'm excited to have you share your love of breathing with our audience. And perhaps we can start with a little bit about your journey and how you got into wanting to discover the breath and what you found.
Well, I never set out to write a book about breathing. And actually, when I started researching this subject, really in a real way, when I was dedicating all my working hours to it, my friends were mocking me. They said, why would you ever want to write a book about breathing? It's so simple. It's something that we just do unconsciously. But the more I delved into this subject, the more fascinated I became with it. And I guess that the first jumping off point, there were a couple, but the first one was having a very weird experience in a breathing class here in San Francisco, where I live. I've lived here forever. There's all kinds of breathwork stuff going on all over the place, but I had been suffering from chronic respiratory problems, bronchitis, and even bouts of minor grade pneumonia. And my doctor suggested I focus on my breathing, go to a breathing class. So I remember sitting in this room of this old house and breathing in this rhythmic pattern, and just sweat was pouring out of me. Not even like I was exercising, not that kind of sweat, some other kind of sweat. I thought, wow, this is so weird. I asked my doctor what had happened. She, of course, had no idea. And as a science journalist, I didn't want to write a memoir. That's not what I do. So I just kind of filed this experience away until I met freedivers who had mastered the art of breath so well that they're able to hold their breath for 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes at a time and really do what was thought to be medically and scientifically impossible. They do it all the time. And I thought, wow, there's so much to this subject that we don't know. And so I spent several years in the field talking to experts and doing experiments and just trying to get my head around it all.
You did a particularly interesting experiment that you talk about in the book, and that is to tape your mouth shut. Now, anybody listening might wonder why on earth would one want to tape their mouth shut? So maybe you could explain both why it is an interesting key and B, what your experience was.
So a lot of us think that the pathway through which we take in breath doesn't matter. The mouth, the nose, who cares? We're just breath is breath and it's getting into our lungs and that's fine. And a lot of the medical community believes this as well because they know that the body can compensate for different ways of breathing, but compensation is different from being healthy. So the more I started talking with rhinologists and other experts, I was working with Dr. Jayakar Nayak down at Stanford, numerous interviews with him, and he kept explaining all of these essential functions that the nose plays in our health, mental functions, physical functions. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And it turns out that from about 25 to 50% of the population habitually mouth breathes. So we don't get any of the benefits of nasal breathing when we're breathing through our mouths. So it was part of my research. I wanted to see if I could improve my breathing over the course of a year. And I took CAT scans before and after and adopted different breathing habits. And one of them, and I know this sounds sketchy, but they're studying this at Stanford and there's doctors who have been prescribing this for decades, is at night especially, is to use a teeny piece of tape, put that over your lips, so that you are not going to be mouth breathing at night. And so much of our health depends on those two channels. And if we're breathing through our mouth for a third of our life, it's just bad news across the board.
So you actually did this and you record this in painstakingly gross detail. What happens when you force yourself to, the first thing you did was you covered your nose and you had to breathe only through your mouth. Can you talk a little bit about those results? And it kind of underscores the importance of breathing through the nose in ways that nobody would have ever imagined.
The experiment was set up in two stages. So working with Nayak down at Stanford and another subject who was a breathing therapist from Sweden, he was so convinced of the power of nasal breathing and had been telling his clients about how they needed to be nasal breathing all the time. And he wanted to see the effects as well. So we had silicone in our noses. If that sounds like it sucked, it's because it absolutely did. For 10 days. So we were only breathing through our mouths. And a lot of people think this is like some jackass stunt or whatever, but we were really lulling ourselves into a position that the vast majority of the population already knew, if 25 to 50% are doing this. So the most miraculous thing about it, or the most horrific, depending on your politics, was what happened to our sleep. I went from not snoring at all to instantly snoring. Not only that, but I instantly got sleep apnea. My stress levels just went through the roof. My blood pressure shot up about 20 points. We were anxious. We were miserable. I mean, just a whole laundry list of problems just associated by switching the pathway in which we breathe. And what's interesting is that ancients have known about this stuff for thousands of years. Various scripts through various cultures have said, do not breathe through the mouth, breathe through the nose. It was just interesting to us to put a little more science behind that and see in our own bodies all the damage that could be done by breathing this way.
Yeah, if I recall, by breathing simply through your mouth, not through your nose, your blood pressure shot up. You had a growth of bacteria inside of your nose because the nose wasn't clearing itself. Like all of these things that we really don't consider when we think about which orifice to breathe through.
Yeah, a lot of us think that snoring and sleep apnea is inherited and there's not much we can do about it. But that's not true. So Stanford is now booting up a study right now with 200 people looking at mouth breathing, nasal breathing, and sleep apnea and snoring. So I've gotten dozens and dozens of emails from people saying that they don't snore after they've used this little piece of tape, after they've trained themselves to keep their mouths shut. And this is not a psychosomatic or placebo effect. When you close your mouth, and you can try it right now, if you open your mouth up, your tongue is going to gently kind of fall back into your airway. That's going to make it harder to breathe. When you close your mouth, that tongue is going to move forward to the upper palate. So the more you nasal breathe, the wider that airway is going to be, the more you're going to be able to tone it so that you're going to be breathing that way most of the time. And so to me, this is such a simple thing. It's such simple physics. And yet no one has been talking about it except for the ancients hundreds and thousands of years ago.
So tell us your little hack. You take a small piece of tape, and this isn't just like duct tape, so your lips don't get stuck together and the skin's not going to come off. Walk us through what you do.
Yeah, don't go on YouTube. Don't go online. Please don't do that, because you're going to see a bunch of quackery, people using 10 pieces of tape and putting X's across their mouths. You don't need any of that. The point of this is not to hermetically seal off your lips from breathing. It's just to train that jaw shut. So I use a teeny piece of micropore tape. This is like surgical tape with a very light adhesive on it. And I just put it right at the center of my lips. People have said, oh, you have a beard, you have a mustache, you can't tape your mouth. I've been doing it for 2 years. So it's just to train yourself. If you can talk, even if you can cough and you can breathe through your mouth, if you really want to, and this tape comes immediately off. Someone had written, what if I get sick? Am I going to asphyxiate? No, because you've got this teeny piece of tape that will just come instantly off. This little hack alone can make such a difference in your quality of sleep. And I've seen it because we've recorded various different metrics before and after mouth taping and have seen the quality of sleep, be it with snoring or sleep apnea, oxygenation, even blood sugar. So by just keeping your mouth shut at night and breathing through your nose.
Amazing. So anybody who's trying this, send me an email, ariel@choosemuse.com. I'm very curious about your effects. And if you have any questions, I can pass them along to James. So small piece of tape over the mouth, through the night, see what happens.
Well, so just a caveat here, disclaimer, I'm not going to say this is going to work for every single person on the planet. There's some people who have certain issues that it isn't going to work for. But from my personal experience, worked for me, and it's worked for the majority of people that I've recommended it to.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you've ever thought about therapy and haven't quite jumped in yet, it may be the right time to explore BetterHelp. Whether you're looking for new coping skills or to improve a relationship, or maybe dealing with some social anxiety or just need to recharge your batteries, so you can be the best version of yourself, therapy is great. And this could be just the right time to give BetterHelp a shot. Finding a therapist through BetterHelp is easy. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and they do their best to match you with a licensed therapist that's a great fit for you. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now back to our show.
Now let's talk a little bit about the ability of the breath to regulate the body. Breathing is something that we do without thinking about it. And in meditative arts, we take the time to actually pay attention to our breath and to slow it down and to shift it. And we experientially understand that that's creating a shift in our body when we slow down our breathing. But can you delve a little bit into the science of it and explain what happens in our body as we shift our breath?
Sure. So you can think about breathing as this lever. You can use it in ways to stimulate the body to get active, or you can use it in ways to relax the body. The way you do this is when you're breathing more, when you're inhaling more, you're stimulating the body. When you're exhaling more, you are relaxing the body. Now, there's hundreds of different breathing practices that use these two different modes, and they work because they're all circling around the same thing, is that active state or that relaxation state. For instance, about 20 years ago, researchers in Italy were looking at people who breathed at this rate of about 5.5 seconds in, 5.5 seconds out. It so happens to be that this is the same rate that is required to recite the Ave Maria, the Catholic prayer cycle of the Rosary, and Om Mani Padme Hum. They were amazed to find that not only those two prayers, but various other prayers in different cultures also adhered to the same breathing rhythm. So you can pray if you want. Nothing wrong with that. That's great. But just by breathing in this way, you're able to take the systems of the body and put them into a state they called coherence. And what I mean by that is all the systems are working at peak efficiency. And it's been fascinating. We had a very pro heart rate variability monitor here during the test. And just by breathing in this way, all of the jagged lines of your heart and nervous system function, they all become these very smooth sine waves. And your body starts to come back into balance. And it's my belief, meditation, we know the benefits of meditation. You certainly know the benefits of meditation. At the beginning, it is my belief that most of those benefits come from breathing in a specific way, less with visualization, but with the breathing side of things.
So in the Muse breathing exercise that we have, the relaxing breath, you're breathing in for 4, and then you're breathing out for 6. So this accomplishes the same idea of the 5.5 or 6 breaths per minute, which actually syncs to your heartbeat. And if you look at your heart graph at the end of your Muse session, you can actually see the sinusoidal wave that it creates as you breathe in for 4 and out for 6.
So that breathing practice is also very close to like box breathing. It's that balance that we really want, right? Sometimes you want to get extremely relaxed before you go to bed, right? So you're exhaling way more than you're inhaling. But most of the time, we just want that balance so we can think clearly, so our bodies will be working at peak efficiency. So it's so great that you guys have an algorithm to show you the benefits of that. And that's another thing I love about breathing. It's, you can see that this isn't a placebo effect because it's so easy to measure what happens to your body when you shift your breathing. You can not only feel it, but you can see the data from that as well.
You prescribe a range of different breathing techniques to energize people or support them in relaxation. Can we talk about different breath techniques? Most people have heard of holotropic breathing, or Wim Hof has popularized Tummo technique, but most people don't know it's Tummo. Let's go through a few different techniques and talk about what they are and how they work and why they work.
Sure. What I tried to do in the book was, there are so many techniques. You pick up a yoga book, you're like, oh my God, there's 400 breathing techniques with all these crazy names. How am I going to do all these? I tried to focus on what all of these different cultures had come to understand, because whether you're looking at ancient Chinese cultures, their system of breathing, you're looking at ancient yoga, you're looking at more modern systems, they're all kind of doing the same thing to the body. They've all named it different things. People have put the word method at the end of them, but these things have been around for a long time. And it's fascinating to just see all of the parallels between these different systems that were developed in different cultures over hundreds and hundreds of years.
Can we dive into some of them? So let's look at holotropic breath.
Absolutely. That wasn't to scare you away. I was just saying that they fit into a few very specific categories. So I'm more than happy to talk about whichever specific method.
Well, why don't you break down the categories for us?
The categories I used, two very broad categories, are the ones that will help you relax and the ones that will stress you out on purpose, purposely stress you out. People think, why would I possibly want to be stressed out? I'm stressed out throughout the rest of the day. Well, but there are very therapeutic reasons for being stressed out. Hormesis, or hermetic stress, is what it is. And it compounds the stress of your day into one focus session so that you can relax the rest of the time.
Tell us about them.
Well, one of which is holotropic breathwork. So this has been around since the 70s. It was developed by Stan Grof, who was one of the early researchers into LSD. And he was using LSD to treat his patients when in 1968, LSD got banned. It was made illegal. So Grof started developing a new system that could elicit some of the effects of LSD without getting him thrown in jail. And he developed holotropic breathwork, which I know a lot of people have heard of, and even more people perhaps have tried. But for those who haven't, this is about going into a room, you listen to very loud music, and you breathe as hard as you can for 3 hours. That's holotropic breathwork.
And what are the effects of it? How does it work and why does it work? It's funny because most people say, oh, well, I'm breathing so hard. And the teacher will say, like, you're taking in so much oxygen, you're over-oxygenating. But my understanding is actually it's a carbon dioxide experience. So tell us about it.
It absolutely is. This is the one, because it was so popular, I wanted to really go into it in the book and try to figure out the science. So what we know on the scientific side is, yes, it really seems to work. Jimmy Eyerman used this with 10,000 patients in a hospital over the course of a decade and found that they had tremendous benefits from it. But I've even talked to one of the main people who runs the holotropic sessions here in the Bay Area, and she said that the science, though, is not very clear on exactly what happens to the body in these states, which is still exciting. There's so much we don't know. What we do know is by putting yourself into the state of chronic, very intense hyperventilation for 3 hours, you are off-gassing so much CO2 that you become deficient in oxygen. And that sounds counterintuitive. You're like, wouldn't I be getting more oxygen when I get less CO2? The opposite's happening. So right now, let's do a little mini holotropic breathwork session, everybody. So just breathe as hard as you can for about 20 breaths. So if you keep breathing that way, you're going to feel some tingling in your fingers. You're going to feel some numbness. You're going to feel some lightness in your head.
Got it. Check, check, check.
Okay. That is not from an increase of oxygen. That is from a decrease of circulation in these areas. So just imagine doing that for 3 hours. And that's what holotropic breathwork does, is it places your body into a state of extreme stress to kind of push you through your stress, to purge you of your stress, so that you can come out on the other side and be healed of whatever problems you have. That's the main impetus, the main science or foundation of holotropic breathwork.
So that's a practice that increases stress by decreasing the amount of oxygen and starving your body, essentially. Let's talk about one of the relaxing breath techniques and how they work.
Well, I think the one that you just went through a couple minutes ago was great. Inhale for 4, exhale for 6. You can inhale, you can do the 5.5 in, the 5.5 out. That is a wonderful one as well. And there's so many variations of this. Again, 4.7.8, which is, I'm throwing out a lot of numbers to you poor people, but 4.7.8 is inhale for 4, hold for 7. Exhale for 8. If you notice, that's 15 seconds in which you are either holding your breath or exhaling. So it evokes this very robust relaxation response. And again, these things are very clear to see when you start measuring what happens to your body. I've noticed I have borderline higher blood pressure, not bad, but it's getting up there. And just by breathing, 5.5 seconds in, 5.5 out, don't worry about that half second, just anything in the ballpark. I've been able to see my blood pressure sink 10 or 15 points, and other people have seen it as well. And again, this isn't like some voodoo new age magic. This is physiology. This is how our bodies operate.
Yeah, it's actually fascinating the way that your heart is correlated to your breath. So there's a cycle, you know this, I'm explaining for the audience. There's a cycle called the sinusoidal arrhythmia that most people have no idea about, but it happens every second. As you breathe in, your heart rate increases. And as you breathe out, your heart rate decreases. So as you're spending more time in an extended exhale, you're spending more time in a decreasing heart rate. So that's now signaling to your body, rest and digest, parasympathetic nervous response, calm down. And earlier you were mentioning heart rate variability, just to kind of explain the link between those two for the audience. Your heart rate variability is the difference between your slowest heart rate and your fastest heart rate on any in-breath, out-breath cycle. So if you're doing an in-breath and increasing your heart rate and then doing extended out-breath and really slowing it down, you've then increased your heart rate variability. And an increased heart rate variability correlates to measures of increased health across the board, correlates to less depression, higher athletic ability, better heart rate, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, these techniques are really powerful.
What a fantastic definition of both those. Thank you for that. With HRV especially, this is something that a lot of people think, like, the heart is just beating constantly at the same rate. Sometimes it does when you're extremely sick. So the more heart rate variability you lose, that is usually associated with pathologies or problems. So you really want that variation. And exactly what you just said, you can feel this if you take a breath to a count of two or three and then exhale for 12, if you can last that long, just in a really relaxed way, you just feel your heart rate slowing down slower, slower, and slower. And you can watch big drops in blood pressure with that as well.
So you also did a lot of experimentation with really slow breathing. And in the book, talk about how overbreathing is a problem. Now, to most of us, we think, well, don't we want more oxygen? Can you talk a little bit about this concept of overbreathing and how to correct it?
Sure. In the States, and I guess elsewhere in the Western world, we really want to do the most all the time. We want to push, push, push. And so a lot of people think that breathing should be considered as something we should really push to its maximum potential as well. And so when we work out, I mean, you can see this at gyms if they were open. You can go out on the street and see people jogging around. You see people doing this all the time where they're just... So what we were just talking about with that slower breaths and that relaxation, just guess what breathing like that is going to do to you. It's going to completely jack you up and completely overwork your body. So another thing it's going to do is it's going to deny yourself of circulation. And that's especially a problem when you're exercising. We need a balance of carbon dioxide and oxygen in our bodies. So it is absolutely essential. And by having that balance, you can feel that increase of circulation, which is why those longer exhales, you can feel your extremities start to heat up. So it's that CO2 and the balance of CO2, which is so important when we're resting, but it's also very important when we're exercising. And most people, when they're breathing and they're exercising, are breathing way too much, way over their metabolic needs. And by simply slowing their breathing to be more in line with their metabolic needs, they can show huge gains in performance.
It's so counterintuitive because you would think by breathing more, you're bringing yourself more oxygen. So how by slowing down your breathing, are you actually aligning yourself more effectively to your metabolic needs? And how do you know what those metabolic needs are? How slow is too slow?
You can see this with a pulse ox. Pulse oximeter is a great instrument to really test where that threshold is. And we did a ton of studies on this on stationary bikes. So the first thing you want to do when you're working out is breathe through your nose. And I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, that's impossible. It's so hard. I can't do it. For most of us, it is just a matter of conditioning. And there's such a huge foundation of science showing the benefits of nasal breathing, one of which is we will get 20% more oxygen if in equivalent breaths through our noses than through our mouths. So you just imagine what that's going to do for your endurance. And another thing to think about is at rest, if you were to breathe, so you could just try a little trick with me here. If you were to breathe at a rate of about 20 breaths a minute, which is just 2 breaths a minute more than what is considered normal right now, 20 breaths a minute. So those breaths have to be very short, right? And your diaphragmatic movement is very limited. Most of that breath is going to be in your throat, in your mouth, in the bronchi, at the very top of your lungs. So you're not able to use that breath for oxygen. It's in what is called dead space. So by breathing deeper and by breathing less, you actually get more access to oxygen.
So breathing less meaning less breaths per minute, yet potentially more oxygen in each breath.
Both those things. Absolutely. You don't want to deny yourself of oxygen. You need oxygen to burn fat, to run all the cells in your body, of course, but it's how you get that oxygen, how you can get it most efficiently. And another benefit of breathing these very slow and longer breaths when you're working out is your heart rate is going to be lower. And if you're able to do the equivalent exercise with a lower heart rate, guess what? You can push it even further and you can go longer and recover faster next time. The one thing a breathing therapist, Patrick McEwen, told me, which I thought was really good advice, is he said, you never work out harder than you can breathe correctly. So if you find yourself breathing through your mouth, breathing is becoming dysfunctional, you need to slow down and slowly build up that threshold.
Okay.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
So you had 2 studies in your book that indicated that the greatest indicator of lifespan wasn't genetics or diet or the amount of exercise. It was actually lung capacity. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Researchers in the 1980s looked at about 3 decades of data with 5,000 patients. This is part of the Framingham study. And found that those patients with larger lungs who shared in respiratory health were living the longest. And I found another study, I didn't put this into the book, my editor thought it was too weird, where they even looked at people who had had lung transplants, and those who were given larger lungs lived longer lives. The ancients, again, have known this for a long time. Guess what the first yoga was? You sat there and breathed. You weren't doing downward dogs. You weren't doing vinyasa flow. It was a technology of breathing. And even more modern yoga. Now, what is it? You're stretching, opening up your lungs, opening up that rib cage, and breathing into it. And once we reach the age of around 30, our lung capacity will continue to shrink something like 15% by the time we're 30, by the time we get to 50, and even more after that. So this is when you need breath the most. And we're suffering from this entropy of aging. But what's so fascinating to me is it can be reversed, and you can reverse it with proper breathing habits.
And so if somebody is thinking, oh dear, are my lungs shrinking? What can they do? What exercises would you recommend for their lungs?
If they're thinking that, they're probably right. If they're over the age of 30, their lungs are shrinking.
Busted.
So yeah, any even moderate exercise, people have been shown to increase their lung size by about 15%. But if you look at free divers, who are a population of athletes I became fascinated with and wrote about in my previous book, is these people, it's all about having a larger gas tank when you're underwater, right? So they've learned how to really expand their lung capacity. Average adult male lung capacity is 6 liters. There's some free divers who have a lung capacity of 12 liters. So they weren't born this way. This is something they did through the power of will and through the power of breathing. Expanding your lung capacity, at least according to the data, you're going to increase your chances of living longer.
And do you do that just by taking extended exhales and holding your breath as you do, by holding your inhales? What are some of the techniques?
There's a zillion different ways to do it. Yoga is a great one. That's a great starting point. There are other methods in which you really focus on getting the air out before you get it in. So the only way to get in that nourishing breath of air, right, you have to get the stale air out. So you move that diaphragm up, you exhale, you breathe in through your nose because that's going to help that air get to the lower lobes. And you try to just keep the rib cage and the respiratory muscles, you try to keep them flexible. Because if you place your hands right now, so imagine place your thumbs towards your back and your fingers forward. So your hands are kind of sideways, like wings on the side. And when you breathe in, you want to feel your hands moving outward, so laterally. Your stomach inflating, that's good. But the more your hands are moving out laterally, the more you're engaging your diaphragm, the more you're going to help keep those muscles and that skeleton flexible so that lungs won't suffer from that entropy, which so many of us suffer from as we get older.
I'm doing this now as we speak.
I was just going to say, it sounds like you're doing it now. So your hands don't need to move out 6 inches, but you want them to be moving outwards. And this is another trick also that Patrick McEwen showed me, who's been studying this stuff for over 20 years. How's it working out for you?
Really well. My hands are moving significantly, but I have to confess that I spend a lot of time doing deep breaths.
You're not the perfect case study subject there. You're already way ahead of the curve.
Spend a lot of time being with breathing and bringing oxygen in.
Those are the benefits, everyone. See, they want to be like you.
Thank you. Flexible rib cages. Let's talk about some of the other techniques that people have probably heard of, but would enjoy some disambiguation of. Let's start with Wim Hof, because that's one of the most popular ones. Some people probably even do it without really knowing what its aims are. So can you describe what Wim Hof is and how and why it works?
Sure. Wim, and it's funny, he literally just wrote me 2 minutes before this interview. We've been corresponding. So he was a yogi who took an ancient breathing technique. He did not invent anything, and he's very clear about this, and he was able to popularize it, and he's done more for the awareness of breathing than I think anyone in the last 20 years. And what his technique is it's 30 huge breaths. So he has some of his people, I won't call them patients, some of his clients, some of his adherents breathe through the mouth or through the nose. He doesn't care for this exercise. And after those 30 huge breaths, you take one last huge breath, you exhale till you feel about 20% of the air left in your lungs, and then you hold your breath for as long as you can. And after you feel that nagging need to breathe, you inhale again for 15 seconds, and then you start all over again. So a lot of directions there. There's a million YouTube instructionals you can check out. Wim's is great as well. So this is so similar to other pranayamas, and it's so similar to another technique called Sudarshan Kriya. So all of these were developed because they all basically do the same thing. They have you breathe very fast and very hard to hardly breathing at all. It's that swinging back and forth. So when you're breathing that hard, you are stressing your body out. You're flooding it with stress hormones, and you are activating that sympathetic stress, right? And the reason why this is helpful is because so many of us throughout the day are spending our nights half awake, our days half asleep. We just have this constant IV drip of stress throughout every single day. And by compounding that stress to one 15-minute session, you can really allow your body to come back into balance the rest of the time, just as I was mentioning earlier. What's amazing about Wim's, I mean, beyond the fact that you can heat your body up doing this, you can sit in, Wim has sat in ice for 2 hours and not had his core temperature go down, no hypothermia, no frostbite. Scientists still don't understand how that's possible, but other monks have been doing this for thousands of years. But it's especially helpful with people with autoimmune issues, whose immune systems have gone rogue, and psoriasis, arthritis, and more, to have this hermetic stress compounded to one very short section of their day, it allows their bodies to then heal themselves the rest of the time.
And it really does feel like it gives you superpowers. On that exhale, I can do more push-ups more easily than I normally can. On my exhale, I'll be entirely exhaled, and just push-upping over and over and over again. It's mind-blowing that you can get your body to do these strange, strange things.
No one would think this stuff is possible if Wim hadn't gone into so many labs, and if Stanford hadn't started to study him, if he wasn't studied all over the world. And these studies, they didn't come out in like some scrappy little newsletter. They came out in the top scientific journals in the world. So no one's refuting them. They've even had to rewrite textbooks since they started studying Wim and his methods, which is ironic considering these methods are so old, where the autonomic nervous system was supposed to be automatic, beyond our control. It's not. It's within our control, as are some elements of our immune function. And this is blowing people away, because for as long as Western medicine's been around, we were told that these aren't within our control. So it's just showing the true potential of the human body.
Yeah, and the potential of the human mind to intervene. We have two levers, sympathetic and parasympathetic, and it's actually up to us to a great degree when we want to use each of them. When we want to use techniques to ramp our sympathetic nervous system and give us energy and push our fight and flight. And then when we want to apply other techniques to calm and slow our breathing and tug on our vagus nerve and ramp our parasympathetic nervous system to calm everything down. It really is like having the keys to the machine when you understand the power of breath to shift state.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of putting it. And I don't think that people realize that how much of a role breath plays in even mental function. They know that nasal breathing can synchronize the brainwave oscillations in certain areas of the brain to help you respond more closely to emotions, to help you remember things. So this is a two-way street between the brain and the rest of the organs connected by the vagus nerve. And most of the input is coming from the organs back up to the brain. 80% of those pathways are from the organs to the brain. So by just breathing in a certain way, you're sending messages to your organs, which then travel up to the brain and are able to activate these different centers, which I think is so fascinating. Goes back to the old, does the body rule the brain? Does the brain rule the body? And it goes both ways, really. But it's fascinating to see just what a physical response, how that can affect our mental state so strongly.
Yeah, it's amazing. You actually have more nerves that innervate from your heart to your brain than from your brain to your heart.
And the fact that you now have a machine that anyone can measure these responses with is fantastic. So if people can experiment in different ways, I would love to see the Muse during holotropic breathwork. Have you used it during Wim Hof and looked at what happens to your brain?
We have lots of Musers who have done that. I've had lots of people that come up to me and say they use, they'll do a Muse session, then they'll do a Wim Hof session and track through the Wim Hof, and they do tons of experiments. So I can ping our community and get their replies.
It would be fascinating because something very powerful, if anyone's done this, like we're talking about the benefits, the physical benefits to your body, immune system, nervous system, but there's also psychological benefits. I feel so good after doing Wim Hof breathwork, after doing pranayama, after doing Sudarshan Kriya, because again, they're all doing the same thing. And that's nothing to put your nose up to, like feeling good and feeling whole. Yeah, I was just going to say, why did I say that? It's hard to avoid these things. And feeling good and having that experience is, that's a wonderful thing. And I do these intense breathing practices before I go to sleep, and I'm able to sleep so much better.
So before we wrap up, can you share one last breath practice that is a go-to for you that somebody can pull out of their hat when they need it?
Here's a neat one, even though it's not quite allergy season yet, but this is a trick I learned again from Patrick McEwen, is whenever your nose is plugged, you can use the power of breathing and CO2 to unplug it. So what you do is you take a calm exhale, and you can try this with me, and you can place your fingers and close your nostrils and move your head up and down, move it side by side, try to really hold your breath. Don't hold it until you're totally struggling. Then when you feel that need to breathe, take a very slow and focused breath through your nose. Lift your fingers through your nose. Wait about 45 seconds and do that same thing over again. And what this does is it increases CO2, it causes vasodilation, it helps open up the nose. And a lot of people may seem skeptical about this, but next time your nose is plugged, give that a go and see how it works for you. That's not quite an EEG study, but it's a little more pragmatic for chronic sinusitis. But for those of you with allergies, it's worth giving it a try.
That's amazing. That's great. And I just prior to this interview did some alternate nostril breathing based on the recommendation from your book, breathing in on the right nostril, breathing out on the left nostril, alternating about 20 breaths. And I can't believe how much better I felt. So that's now going to be my back pocket anytime I need a little focus and pick me up simultaneously, alternate nostril, in through the right, out through the left.
And these practices, again, have been around for thousands of years, and they've shown very clear with EEG studies, looking at just breathing through the right nostril, how that activates more the left side of the brain, just breathing through the left nostril, how that activates more of the right creative side, quote unquote, creative side of the brain. And it's fascinating that our noses naturally do this throughout the day. Our noses are covered with this tissue that will inflame or contract to allow us to shift our breathing from one nostril to the other every 30 minutes to 3 hours. Another reason why you want to breathe through the nose, you can get all of those benefits as well.
Well, I'm sure we all now feel very well educated on the internals of our nose. We know more about the nose than we'd ever thought we wanted to, and probably are left still wanting to know more because this is all really fascinating. So where can people find more about you?
My website, mrjamesnester.com. Some jerk took James Nestor, so I'd put an MR in front of there. I have all of the scientific studies in the book. They're available for free. There's videos. There's doctors leading you through breathing practices. All that's there. I'm trying to get better at the social media thing. I'm on Instagram under the same handle, Mr. James Nestor, and Facebook under the same name.
And of course, everybody should pick up the book Breath, available on Amazon or your favorite bookseller.
Wherever books are sold, which I guess is just online now, as sad as that is, but try your local bookshop as well if you're so inclined.
Awesome. Well, this has been an absolute joy, highly informative, and probably none of us will breathe quite the same again.
Thank you very much for having me.
My sincere pleasure.
That was James Nestor. He shares more about these ideas in his fascinating book, Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art. If you're curious about how Muse can give you insight into your breath practice, Muse 2 and Muse S are actually equipped with sensors that track your breath and give you guided breathing exercises to learn different types of breath patterns. You can actually hear when you're breathing along the pattern and when you're going off course. And then after your breath exercise, you can actually see your breath and your heart rate to learn your correlations between your breath, your heart, and your brain activity, with loads of data from your brain, heart, breath, and body. You can find it at choosemuse.com and use the discount code MUSESTRESSLESS. Wishing you relaxing and energizing breaths, and we'll be here with you next week for the next Untangle.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.